This is Father Ted, and you are listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Bunker Podcast. My name is Father Ted, and today we have a very special guest. My friend Tula is not a jiu-jitsu practitioner. I don't think she's ever done jiu-jitsu in her life. But many of you know who have been following the podcast and have come to the Bunker Tournament, the tournament being a charitable tournament. One of the main projects that we and programs that we support is, of course, HOPE, it's HOPE, which stands for Helping Others Profit Elias, which is a wonderful program based out of my church, run by Tula, and I'll let Tula talk about it. But it is the reason why all of you who come and compete bring big bags of non-perishable food items to our church, and every year the pile and the mountain gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and I'm hoping that it will continue to grow every year. So today I have Tula Gonadales-Ciosi, who is the founder, creator, and I guess you could say director of HOPE, and I'm really happy to have her on to tell us her story. So Tula, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. So, you know, as you probably haven't heard the podcast before, but usually whether it's somebody who does jiu-jitsu or somebody who doesn't, usually I just ask, you know, what's your story? Like, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about where you come from, and then we can get into like HOPE.
Sure. Well, you're correct. I have never done jiu-jitsu, admittedly so, guilty.
Yet.
I do revolve, you know, within the fitness circle. So I am very big at, in, you know, regular boxing. Physical fitness has always been a part of my life. I've played many organized sports throughout the course of my life. And I just really enjoy what we get out of that, both emotionally, physically, mentally, and everything. So I can appreciate the love for the jiu-jitsu side of things. I've just never personally tried it, but it is on my list of things to do. I grew up in the Greater Toronto Area, born and raised in Etobicoke. I've been going to Prophet Elias Church for 35 years, volunteered in various programs. I grew up in Etobicoke, went to school at York University. I work in clinical research as a full-time job. And I'm married to a wonderful man, and I have a wonderful stepdaughter and two really adorable dogs who I love very much. And I love my whole family, I should say. I've been volunteering, you know, over the years through various programs at Prophet Elias. I was a Sunday school teacher for 24 years. I volunteered running the youth program on and off for almost 15 years. And one thing how HOPE sort of happened, and in all honesty, the idea sort of came up from the centralized Philoptochos group within Toronto, I guess, or within Canada. They kind of were doing some sort of charitable programs. What's that?
You got to stop for a sec, because our people who are listening to this podcast who have no concept of what the Philoptochos is.
Sorry.
So just to kind of clarify it for everyone, because you know, most people are listening are not Orthodox and have no concept of what's going on in our church. But Philoptochos, which is a Greek word, basically translates as friends of the poor. And pretty much every Greek Orthodox church, not only in Canada, but in the States, and also a lot of places in Greece and other places, have this kind of women's auxiliary organization, which is kind of like the philanthropic arm of every local Orthodox parish, right? So these women are wonderful, and they do everything and anything, but their main goal is to help the poor. So that's just a clarification.
Go on, Tula. I appreciate that. Thank you. Absolutely. And you know, I want to say 2018, a dear friend of mine, Mika, had attended one of their philanthropic or charitable events. And, you know, that's kind of sort of where the idea of that really grew, because while it was sort of spearheaded by this Philoptochos society or program, various people of all age groups and whatnot were able to attend whatever event was being held and help. And it sort of, so when Mika kind of attended that, she came to me, and I loved the idea of having a program that catered to all demographics within our church. So while we have, and all churches from what I understand, or at least most, have a Philoptochos group, it's typically, as you mentioned, comprised of women. And usually women of a certain age or above.
Older women.
Correct. Yeah. And it, listen, I get it, right? So yeah. There's that. And then we also typically have community councils that are run through every church that kind of run the overall functional aspects of the church as a whole. Right. So, and again, traditionally over the course of time, and I know that that's changing now, most of those were generally and traditionally comprised of older men. Yep. And then you have Sunday school, which is a program that's dedicated to the kids. So Philoptochos mm-hmm. does a lot, at least our Philoptochos in our church does a lot of monetary donations, which is wonderful. And they do some charitable events as well. But a lot of what they do is monetary fundraising, which is wonderful. Correct. And they do amazing work. The fundraising done through the council is directed more toward the church and keeping that afloat and, you know, building projects and so on and so forth. So there's that. And then the Sunday school raised money for its own program, which went back toward, you know, the students and things like that. And one of the things that I've always observed was that, or, and even the youth program, when I was running it, we did a lot of charitable work, but again, it catered to a very specific age group. Yep. So what we thought of with Hope was, why not have a program where we can, you know, it's comprised of volunteers from all ages and it's focused on helping others with a lot more hands-on work, in addition to fundraisers and drives as well. But it's all encompassing. So we've had volunteers from the age of 5, obviously supervised by an adult, to, you know, people in their 70s and 80s, and that male, female, you know, everybody's welcome. And that's one of the things that really appealed to me. We didn't have anything within our community that really enabled all people to kind of come together and volunteer as one.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's really good because, like you said, it kind of encompasses and crosses all the different organizations. And it's also more hands-on. This doesn't mean that Philoptochos is not hands-on, but their style of fundraising, their style of giving, like they give a lot to like hospitals and other shelter monetary donations, but this is more of like a hands-on thing. Like you're making meals, you're going out into the community, you're you know what I mean? So I'll let you talk about that, but like it's a different kind of giving and it's much more interactive and much mm-hmm. more, I would say, hands-on. And like you said, yeah, you can pull people from everywhere, from the youth, from the board, from this, from that.
Yeah.
Who are not in any of these organizations. Just bring
absolutely.
Them, right? So,
yeah, we've actually, and it's wonderful because we've had people who are within, like even students or whatnot, who are within our community that bring friends of theirs from their school, sure. Who are not Orthodox, who are not, you know, within our, you know, community per se. And we welcome that. We want people to come and see what we do because it shouldn't just be limited to that. But we wanted to start somewhere. And speaking of starting, so Hope did its first official event in 2019. So we are in our 6th year now. And I honestly can't believe I'm actually saying that, to be honest. But, you know, and it has grown exponentially. And we're very proud of that. And the thing is, we model everything we do with Christ at the center. We really look at the charitable lessons and teachings that Christ gave us to work with, you know, to kind of inspire us and motivate us and really help us organize how we want to do these events that we do. You know, and again, while it's not, you know, it's not a church service, we sure. do like to take those examples and use those as inspiration for all that we do.
Mm-hmm. So going back, what was your first event? How did that go?
Our first event actually was the Agape Bags, but we did them in the summer. So agape means love in Greek. And I have a funny story to tell you much later on. But anyway, so agape bags is basically love bags. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to show people who are homeless or living on the streets or whatever the case might be, that people do care for them. And we basically put together care backpacks. And we traveled into, you know, certain areas. In that case, it was downtown Toronto. And we handed out bags with bottled water, with food, with snacks, with gift cards, whatever we thought, oral, like dental hygiene products that we had donated as well. And everything that we put in those bags and the bags themselves we were able to do through either monetary donations that we were able to use to purchase items or actual donations from people who, for instance, work in as a dental hygienist or a dentist, for example. And it was really something, honestly, for me personally, and I know the same can be said for many of those who actually participated in that particular event for the first time. It was the first time we had done anything like that. And it was a very profound experience for a lot of us. Yeah, I don't know why I'm getting a little emotional, to be honest. But anyway,
because we don't see, first of all, we don't see these things anymore. And like, it, you know, this is kind of like a separate conversation altogether. But like, whether, you know, in kind of like in the Western world, and especially a place like Canada, okay, where we have a very, very, one could say like a robust social safety net, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. It's like, you pay higher taxes, you have a lot of programs, right? But where it's not a good thing, and I was having a debate about this with a friend once when I was studying in the States, who was like very hardcore, like Republican, you know, and he was like, for less social programs. And I thought, oh, how can you be a Christian and be for less social programs? And his argument was, is that people, like, to be good people and to actually have compassion and love for other people, they need to do these things themselves. It's one thing, like you said, when you pay your taxes and then somebody else takes care of the homeless people, right? When you pay, you just pay, you know, take the money out of my paycheck and there's a program for these people. Just send them somewhere else, right? But it's not in your face. Like, you're out on the street with people to see them, like look in their face and interact with them and learn their names, and they're human beings, right? This is like a depersonalization of the homeless, right? And so what Hope is doing, and any really program where you're actually going out into the community, is extremely mm-hmm. valuable, because you remember, well, first of all, we remember our humanity. And that's
correct.
That's why you get emotional, because you remember that's like, well, no, it's like, it's better for us to take ownership of our communities. That's how it was in the old days.
Yeah.
Before we had all these programs, right?
Yeah.
Take care of the person that was at your doorstep or they die.
Yeah.
Right. And that was the place of the church. In
absolutely.
In ancient times, it was the church that created hospitals, the first shelters, all those things were created by the church, because there was no other social safety net out there, right? Yep. So that's why I think you get emotional, because you actually are doing the thing that is like beautiful and, you know.
Yeah. You're 100% right. And I think further to that, I think especially in today's society where, shock value is something that, you know, people just constantly crave more and more and more of, which creates a level of desensitization, right? And I feel like, and I've always said this in my Sunday school class, charity was always a big part of the lessons that I taught because of the age group that I was teaching within, which was grade 6 and 7 or 7, 8. And it's a very interesting age because they're right in between the overprotection of their parents, but also starting to slowly gain more and more of their independence. And, you know, thank God, most of these kids came from very stable, well-established homes. They never got, especially in suburban areas, where they never really got the exposure of seeing a person sleeping on a street corner. And even if you did, you sort of just drive by it, and it doesn't really percolate the way it could or should in some instances. So I feel like in a society we live in today, we become very desensitized with the shock value that we see on social media and in movies and shows and things. So it doesn't affect you because everything's on a screen now. So yeah. You don't feel like you have any connection to it. But what we also don't realize is how quickly it can happen to almost anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, in today's economy, it can be within a matter of months where a person can go, you know, find themselves in a situation where they can't, it's either paying their rent or buying groceries. You know, it can happen very quickly. And I've actually seen it happen to people in my own life throughout, you know, my growing up. Because I grew up in a very not so great area. So you saw a lot of it. And, you know, it really, I always told my students, you know, don't look at a food bank as somebody who's homeless to go and get food. Your neighbor, the person who lives next door to you in a house of equal value, for example, could be using that food bank out of necessity and you wouldn't even know it.
And they do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So it's that sort of reality. And I'm grateful that when I was in the youth group at Prophet Elias, the youth advisor that I had, he was actually the first one. I was about 16, 17. He was the first one who really did any sort of like hands-on work, but it was very enclosed within the youth group. So he took me to my first you know, soup kitchen and food bank, you know, groups of us. And I have pictures from, I would rather probably not share, but very awkward years those were. But, you know, I was very grateful for that experience. And I really felt like our newer generations were sort of missing out a little bit. And I really wanted to expose them to that. And I truly believe you're never too young. Even the hands-on distribution of the agape bags, like we've had kids, of course, with their parents or you know, adult supervision. We've had kids as young as 8, 10 years old come out and hand bags physically to a homeless person on or somebody who just happens to be sitting on the street. That experience sticks with you. It doesn't matter what age you are, that experience for most people sticks to them. And I think that's the experience we're looking to give, because we hope that, pun intended, we hope that, you know, whether hope continues to exist for the next 50 years or 5 years, we want people to take that with them and hopefully maybe, you know, adopt it in other aspects of their own lives. That was a very long-winded answer to a very simple question. So
No, good. So, okay. So, that was the first experience. That was like, so it was 2019, so like right before COVID, like the year.
It was June of 2019. Yeah, so yeah.
COVID was at the end of 2019, right? Yeah. And then, so what is kind of like your average, I guess your average schedule is like for the month or the year, like how often do you hold events?
Right.
And how is that structured?
So generally speaking, it hinges on a couple of variants attached to that. So we'd like to try to do on average one event every 6 weeks, give or take. Mm-hmm. However, in past, we've also recognized that when we try to do things in the summer in general, they're not the greatest turnout. So we tend to kind of take June and July off. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on with you know, festivals and vacations and
people like leave. That. Yeah.
So we typically end, we do our last, hope event before the summer, usually sometime in May. We skip mm-hmm. June, July, and then we always do our back to school drive in August, which sort of aligns, it's always at the end of August. It aligns with the start of the school year, the ecclesiastical year. So it's sort of like a bit of a kickoff into the fall season, so to speak. Sure. And then, yeah, we try to average once a month, once every 6 weeks. And we do pretty well. Like I'm already planning something for the end of September, October, November. Yeah, we pretty much have everything sort of pre-planned for the next few months. So yeah.
Sure.
The other thing too is I want to mention is, so people, and I see this because, you know, in speaking with agencies, whether it be, you know, food banks or soup kitchens or whatever the case is, shelters, et cetera, there's always an influx of donations, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter. Those are the three times a year. And we see it, which is wonderful. But where they really struggle is the in-between. And I've been trying really hard to kind of focus the schedule to sort of fulfill the need in between that. Because a lot of places, a lot of people may not realize, or they just, and I get it, like it just doesn't pop into their head. You know, Thanksgiving's coming up, for example, they're going to get completely raided. Right. And then they're left dry for a good like month and a half until people start coming in for Christmas, which is right around December. So from mid-October to December, that's a month and a half where they're struggling to fill their shelves.
Yeah.
You know, so it's go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. I noticed that with Hope that, you know, yeah, the types of drives that you choose to do are not your classic. You know, like most organizations in a church or in a community, they're going to be like, oh, we're going to do our Christmas drive. Oh, we're going to do our Easter drive. Like you said, right? The big ones where you guys will be doing like, you know, like a flash. Like I noticed that you do a really good job of like paying attention to when a local shelter will put out like a plea, like we need this, right? Like we need this, like it's an emergency. And then Hope will like jump into gear right away and say, okay, we need, for example, cooked foods. And it's no particular holiday or any of that, right?
No, yeah,
this is a dip in the season. Okay, this is where we're going to step in and be even more useful, right? So, and it's always different. I noticed with Hope, which is really good, it's like it's not always the same. You're not always making food, you're not always doing backpacks, it's always different kind of little projects you're picking, which is really nice.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We try to keep it interesting at least. as yeah, well
like
as
back to school, like tell everybody about the back to school. We just finished it, right? What was that about?
So the back to school drive, that is one of our more consistent ones. It's our fifth annual one we just did at the end of August. It's in support of an agency called Kids with Incarcerated Parents. And again, this is a demographic that, you know, these aren't kids on the street, so you don't necessarily think about it, but these are kids who don't have their actual parents in their lives due to incarceration. And so oftentimes these kids end up in, you know, vulnerable family locations. So for example, like an elderly grandparent or even an aunt or an uncle who have their own kids to take care of and deal with, so to speak, or they're in the foster system. And this agency is really good at supporting those kids to make sure that, you know, they're already faced with a difficult circumstance with their parents not being around. We want them to at least start the new year with fresh, clean, new school supplies, giving them the confidence, hopefully a little bit more confidence they need to, you know, start the school year off on the right foot. So every year we do this drive. This agency supports both demographics within the Greater Toronto Area, but also in rural Indigenous communities as well. So Derek, who is the, I guess, the head of that particular agency, he actually went around to a bunch of rural areas for Indigenous communities, and as well as areas in the Greater Toronto Area. And we're always very proud and grateful for the support that we always receive on this particular initiative, because every year every event we do, I have like a bit of an anxiety because I'm like, oh my God, what if nobody shows up? What if people forget about it, even though I'm constantly promoting it?
You never have that problem, too.
No, I haven't. Come on. And, you know what? It takes once. It takes one time to traumatize me. But no.
We have the opposite problem. It fills up too fast. It's like
sometimes, it's true. But yeah. I'm grateful because our community and the people who help us both within and outside of, quote, you know, our community, God bless them. Like, we had people coming in from Hamilton, Woodbridge, Orangeville. We had a family who did their own drive within their neighborhood in preparation for their donation drop off. So again, it's not even so much as like going out and buying stuff. You can also organize smaller drives within jobs, communities, workplaces, whatever, in order to support the greater event, so to speak, which is the Hope event, for example. The ingenuity that people come up with, the things that they come up with that they use in order to kind of support us, is great. It's great. It's, I never predicted that, to be honest. And it's very overwhelming in a great way.
Sure.
Yeah.
Nice. And so, okay. So you're doing it every 6 weeks, so like every month and a half around there, you know, give or take.
On average. Yeah.
On average. So you're pretty efficient too, because so like the way you do it is that you have a mailing list, right? An email list, like the way you put out a call, for example, for support. Right. So if people want to support Hope and they want to kind of like pop in, the cool thing is that there's no obligation. So it's like, you know, different people help out different times. Right.
Yeah.
So basically they send you, you know, they sign up on an email list. Right.
Yep.
And then you pull out, you know, there's an event happening. You send out an email to everybody. And then you'll say, like, you know, capacity is, for example, like we need, I don't know, 40 people, for example. Right. Or we need 30 people, whatever. And this is the particular event that's happening. And then as soon as that fills up, kind of it caps off. And then so thank you for your support next time for the next people. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's typically how it works for any hands-on volunteer things that we do, because I didn't do that one time. I didn't cap it. And again, God bless, we had probably about 170 people show up, and I didn't know, I felt terrible
because
it was hard to kind of organize how to, you know, for to give them something to do. So that was definitely a lesson learned. But when it comes to our drives, I blast it on email, social media. I put it on the church's social media. You announce it. You know, in your sermons and whatnot. So, and, you know, of course, thank you for that. But, it's the overall engagement. The other thing is also, I'm very adamant about showing appreciation, because these people are going above and beyond, whether it be with their wallets, their time, stuff, whatever. So I'm very much on top of, ensuring that I send a thank you note, and a summary of what we did, to show where their good work is going, right? And what we're doing with it. So they know, like, okay, when I give to Hope, whether it's a backpack full of school supplies or even a monetary donation, which we give the option for that. And when we do drives, I personally am the one who goes shopping with the money that we receive through the donations to ensure that that money is going to exactly where it was intended to. Accountability is key, always.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm very adamant about always sending out a thank you note, both on social media and through email, summarizing the things that we did with that particular event, and encouraging people to, of course, donate monetary donations in the interim between events, or, you know, keep an eye out for our upcoming event, right? So engagement is important. Absolutely.
Awesome. So kind of bringing it back to the bunker tournament, because again, we have the new one coming up December 14th, which I know it's the Christmas season. Sorry, no choice but to do it at that time. So I know there's a lot of help already coming in. And historically, like at least for the last two of them, where we've been collecting food, and in the future, like if you also need something different, you should let us know, right? So for example, there's a shortage of something else, right?
Yep.
Maybe you don't need canned food, you don't need whatever, you need something specific, you can tell us and we can change the, you know, because we do the same thing. We put out the call, say, okay, all the competitors, all the spectators, everybody who's coming in, we advertise what we want them to bring, right?
Yeah.
Because like you know, the event is free for everybody. It's just you gotta support the community in some way. And so of course a big part of that is hope. Last year we did have quite a bit. I think you were a little surprised on how much.
I think I almost broke the shocks on my car. I've noted now every time you do something like that with hope, and we appreciate it, I'm just going to bring my husband's pickup truck because my car was like,
And every year it's getting bigger. So it might be, I'm hoping that it's going to be even bigger this year as far as like spectators. And again, even spectators have to bring something in for admission, right? So this is really, really good, because last year we had about almost 100 people there, like including competitors and spectators. I'm banking on having more people this year, so that we need more food or whatever we're going to ask for, right? So, of course, like we'll send that out as soon as, like, if you have any ideas or if you want to change it up a bit.
My mind's already racing.
Yeah, just let me know ahead of time so that we can get the word out to that community. But I think I think it's good, and I've heard really good feedback, even like from like this the jiu-jitsu side, like the competitors, like they really enjoy not only the actual competition, but they're really happy that it's something like that. It's like, I'm not just going there, so I'm gonna go, you know, what's it called, I'm gonna go there and compete and pay a admission or something. No, like they really enjoy that it's going back to the community. It's going towards charity, and in the jiu-jitsu world we do a lot of charity as well. So it's not something that is foreign to it. So I think it's feel good all around.
I love that. And to your point, one thing I've come to realize with hope is people want to give. Like, people inherently are good and they want to give. But here's the thing. Day-to-day life gets in the way. It's not always at the forefront of one's mind. And I get that. We're all busy. We all have lives, you know, jobs, kids, schools, etc. I'm a firm believer that if you organize it, they will come. Like, if you build it, they will come. And that's the thing. People always say, oh, you know, they're so kind. They're thankful that they, you know, the Hope program exists and it gives them an opportunity to give back. Cause people say, like, you, myself, and in your case, you with your tournaments, you organize it. You come up with the idea to use donations as a form of admission, so to speak, right? You organize it. They just bring what you need them to bring. And that's the point. People want to give, but they don't want to, they can't necessarily do the organizational part. They want to volunteer, but they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And that's where my role within Hope comes in. I organize, I do all the background work. They just show up and do what we need them to do. And they appreciate that they don't have to deal with any of the other part of it. Right. Sure. So same with your situation with your tournaments. Yeah. Like, you tell people to bring stuff. Actually, I have a really good idea in my mind. We can take it offline, but I think it'll be really beneficial for one of the agencies that we actually haven't worked with in a while. And I really would like to re-engage them.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm down. Like, yeah, you have to make it easy for people to give.
Agreed.
And just be a good facilitator. And then everything else will fall into place.
Correct.
Or eliminate the obstacles for people to give, right? Like, make it easier, right? So if you're already there, you might as well, like, kill two birds with one stone and, you know, do something even greater for the community. So that's like everything we do anyways, like the church anyway. So why not also extend it to jiu-jitsu as well? So because it's like a private thing for me, but like, why not add to the community as well, right? So
100%.
exciting. Well, I'm excited about this year upcoming. I'm excited about doing it forever, but like, and you know, maybe like expanding and just kind of being able to help as much as we can. Do you have any shout outs for like any of your coworkers, people that, you know, have helped you out along the way, people who are kind of like on your team? Cause I know you do work with some really wonderful people.
I do. So we have Mika Rasia, or I don't know how to say that in English, Rasias. Yeah. She's wonderful. She's the co-founder, if you will, of Hope. She definitely, we complement each other well in terms of I'm very type A, you know, I'm very go-getter. She's a little bit more grounded. So we kind of balance each other out that way. So when we're actually doing an event, she's really good at, I guess the logistical side, so to speak, in the moment versus me who I'm more the greeter, the, okay, guys, this is what we're doing. And, you know, mm-hmm. So we balance each other really well there. And then, of course, we have Louis Georgakopoulos, who is a wonderful volunteer. He comes to pretty much almost every event. He's just the, we tell him what to do and he does it. And it's wonderful. Outside of that, honestly, just anyone who has ever, whether once or 10 or 20 times, has either shown up to one of our volunteer events, donated an item or 10 items or 50 or one or whatever, donated, you know, any sum of money, anybody who's promoted it, right? I always encourage people to like and share our posts on social media or forward our emails to people, you know, from the bottom of my heart, if it wasn't for every single one of those people, we would not be able to do the work we do. And I cannot say that enough. People are so quick to thank us for organizing it. But if we don't have people show up or donate or whatever the case is, we'd be nothing. We wouldn't be able to do a fraction of what we do. And one thing that really warms my heart is seeing the kids come out. Especially teenagers, but all ages. But teenagers, I feel like, is such a demographic that I think is such a, it's an age right now that it's just so important to engage them, get them off their devices, and mm-hmm. start really showing up for the real world. And
Yeah.
So that was a very long-winded shout out, but here I am.
That's okay. All right. Where can people find you on social media? Like, if someone
We have Instagram, we have Facebook. So hope@profitalize.ca is our email. So they can absolutely send us an email. I respond to every single email personally. Hope Profit Elias is our Instagram. I'm just thinking, yeah. But and me, I'm here everywhere. So.
Instagram, you're also on Facebook, no? Or is it?
We are on Facebook as well, yeah.
It's the same name. Hope Profit Elias is under there as well.
Give or take, yeah. It's it's a little bit more complicated, but yeah, it's there. I promise you'll find it.
If you guys are searching, it's Hope, but with like dots in between because
it's an app. I can text it to you if you want to put it up on the screen or something.
Oh, it comes up pretty fast. It's like, people know it's like, it's H period, O period, P period, E period, right? If you put that, it'll come up on Instagram. It'll come up on Facebook.
Exactly.
You'll get to see lots of beautiful pictures of like all the different events that are happening, new events that are coming on. You know, there's all the email blasts, all the information goes on there. So again, if anybody wants to help out, who's listening to this, anybody wants to know more information, you can always check out Hope and on Instagram and on Facebook, and of course email as well. Tula, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. I know you're busy, so taking out like a 45 minutes to an hour of your time in your day to like just talk to my little tiny podcast, which like three people listen to, is really nice. It's a little bit of a niche, but I really appreciate your time because I think it's really important to highlight and to promote the people that we work with. Not because I know you and, you know, it's like we're friends, but like I believe in the work that you're doing. That's why I support it. That's why I wanted to support your program over all the other ones when I thought of this tournament, because I think they're all important, but this is probably one of the most important. So I think it's good to like direct support there. So I really appreciate all the work that you're doing and continue to do it. Please don't stop.
I'm not going to stop. This is one program that's very near and dear for me. So thank you.
Yeah. And thank you very much. And hopefully we'll see you at the tournament. Maybe you'll have time to come and watch a little bit of it this time.
Now that I have more of a heads up, I will absolutely make it a point to attend and help organize all the donations that you receive.
Yeah.
For sure.
we'll organize that. Maybe we'll do something different this year. And yeah, we're looking forward to it. It'll be on December 14th this year, which is a Sunday, probably around 5 p.m. But we'll be releasing more information because we still got about 4 months away from that. But we're starting early so we can start promoting properly. So
I love that.
Yeah. But thank you very much again. Thank you to everybody who's been listening, everybody who supported last year. Hopefully a lot more of you will come out because, again, like we said, like, monetary donations are great, but in-person help is much better. So again, like with the tournament as well, like, come out, because if you come out in person, you're actually going to bring, you know, things that people need, right? Whatever we're asking for. And that's going to make a lot more of a difference, right? So again, we hope everybody comes out, supports this beautiful program, and does some good, has some fun, and does some good jiu-jitsu as well. So again, thank you, Tula. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure, and I do appreciate all your support. We are very grateful.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody else. And we'll see everybody next week on the Bunker Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and YouTube. And if you want to reach out with any questions or if you're interested in being on the show, feel free to email us at bunkerjiujitsu@gmail.com. Thanks and take care.